Wednesday, July 15th, 2026, and you're listening to Abounding Grace Radio with Pastor Chris Gordon. Today in the program, we're in the book of Genesis. We're in chapter 27, starting at verse 1, with a message titled, Taking Sides Against the Family.
What's remarkable about the scene in Genesis 27 is that we come to Father Abraham's family, and every single one of them is doing what is right in their own eyes. Every single one. The covenant family is full of jealousy and lying and deceit and coveting and malice and manipulation and stupidity. And what did God do through all of this? So that seems to be the important question that you have to think about. What did God do in the midst of all of this?
And now here's today's message from Pastor Chris.
Well, we are in our Essential Bible Texts series, and today we come to Genesis chapter 27. Genesis chapter 27, found on page 25 in the Bibles that are in front of you. Genesis chapter 27, we'll be looking at this chapter this morning. Let's hear the word of the Lord. When Isaac was old and his eyes were dim so that he could not see, he called Esau, his older son, and said to him, "My son." And he answered him, "Here I am." He said, "Behold, I am old and I do not know the day of my death. Now then, take your weapons, your quiver and your bow, and go out to the field and hunt game for me and prepare for me delicious food, such as I love, and bring it to me that I may eat, that my soul may bless you before I die." Now Rebekah was listening when Isaac spoke to his son Esau. So when Esau went to the field to hunt for game and bring it, Rebekah said to her son Jacob, "I heard your father speak to your brother Esau, 'Bring me game and prepare for me delicious food that I may eat it and bless you before the Lord before I die.' Now therefore, my son, obey my voice as I command you. Go to the flock and bring me 2 good young goats so that I may prepare from them delicious food for your father, such as he loves. And you shall bring it to your father to eat, so that he may bless you before he dies." But Jacob said to Rebekah, his mother, "Behold, my brother Esau is a hairy man, and I'm a smooth man. Perhaps my father will feel me, and I shall seem to be mocking him and bring a curse upon myself and not a blessing." His mother said to him, "Let your curse be on me, my son. Only obey my voice and go, bring them to me." So he went and took them and brought them to his mother, and his mother prepared delicious food, such as his father loved. Then Rebekah took the best garments of Esau, her older son, which were with her in the house, and put them on Jacob, her younger son. And the skins of the young goat she put on his hands and on the smooth part of his neck. And she put the delicious food and the bread which she had prepared into the hand of her son Jacob. So he went in to his father and said, "My father." He said, "Here I am. Who are you, my son?" Jacob said to his father, "I am Esau, your firstborn. I have done as you told me. Now sit up and eat of my game that your soul may bless me." But Isaac said to his son, "How is it that you have found it so quickly, my son?" He answered, "Because the Lord your God granted me success." Then Isaac said to Jacob, "Please come near that I may feel you, my son, to know whether you are really my son Esau or not." So Jacob went near to Isaac, his father, who felt him and said, "The voice is Jacob's voice, but the hands are the hands of Esau." And he did not recognize him because his hands were hairy like his brother Esau's hands. So he blessed him. And he said, "Are you really my son Esau?" He answered, "I am." Then he said, "Bring it near me to me that I may eat of my son's game and bless you." So he brought it near to him and he ate, and he brought him wine and he drank. Then his father Isaac said to him, "Come near and kiss me, my son." So he came near and kissed him. And Isaac smelled the smell of his garments and blessed him and said, "See the smell of my son. It is the smell of a field that the Lord has blessed. May God give you the dew of heaven and of the fatness of the earth and plenty of grain and wine. Let people serve you and nations bow down to you. Be Lord over your brothers and may your mother's sons bow down to you. Cursed be everyone who curses you, and blessed be everyone who blesses you." As soon as Isaac had finished blessing Jacob, when Jacob had scarcely gone out from the presence of Isaac, his father, Esau, his brother, came in from his hunting. He also prepared delicious food and brought it to his father. He said to his father, "Let my father arise and eat of his son's game, that you may bless me." His father Isaac said to him, "Who are you?" He answered, "I am your son, your firstborn Esau." Then Isaac trembled very violently and said, "Who was it then that hunted game and brought it to me? And I ate it all before you came, and I've blessed him. Yes, and he shall be blessed." As soon as Esau heard the words of his father, he cried out with an exceedingly great and bitter cry and said to his father, "Bless me, even me also, O my father." But he said, "Your brother came deceitfully, and he has taken away your blessing." Esau said, "Is he not rightly named Jacob? For he's cheated me these two times. He took away my birthright. Behold, now he's taken away my blessing." Then he said, "Have you not reserved a blessing for me?" Isaac answered and said to Esau, "Behold, I have made him lord over you, and all his brothers I have given to him for servants, and with grain and wine I have sustained him. What then can I do for you, my son?" Esau said to his father, "Have you but one blessing, my father? Bless me, even me also, O my father." And Esau lifted up his voice and wept. Then Isaac, his father, answered and said to him, "Behold, away from the fatness of the earth shall your dwelling be, and away from the dew of heaven on high. By your sword you shall live, and you shall serve your brother. But when you grow restless, you shall break his yoke from your neck." Now Esau hated Jacob because of the blessing with which his father had blessed him. And Esau said to himself, "The days of mourning for my father are approaching. Then I will kill my brother Jacob." But the words of Esau, her older son, were told to Rebekah. So she sent and called Jacob, her younger son, and said to him, "Behold, your brother Esau comforts himself about you by planning to kill you. Now, therefore, my son, obey my voice, arise, flee to Laban, my brother in Haran, and stay with him a while until your brother's fury turns away, until your brother's anger turns away from you and he forgets what you have done to him. Then I will send and bring you from there. Why should I be bereft of both of you in one day?" Then Rebekah said to Isaac, "I loathe my life because of the Hittite women. If Jacob marries one of the Hittite women like these, one of the women of the land, what good will my life be to me?" And there ends the reading of God's word. I was walking in to church and somebody said to me, looking at the sermon title, "Are you going to quote The Godfather? Never take sides against the family." I think we have this false perception. I mean, you all look so good today. Everyone walks in and says, "These are really well put together families in the Escondido URC." That's the perception that, of course, we have. And the Bible is constantly showing us things and taking down false perceptions that we have constantly. And this in front of you today is a giant mess in every single way. I think we said in the study of the prophets the last few weeks how much they are like us. The scriptures are strikingly realistic about the sins and failures of God's people. What good is a gospel message? I was in the barbershop the other day and somebody held up the picture of the Mormons and asked me in the whole barbershop, "What do you think of them?" I said, "Do you really want to get into this right now?" And he goes, "Look at them, they're so perfect. How could anything be wrong? They're so together." And so then I had to give him the bad news. This is important, for stories like this are meant to accomplish a few things. They're meant to accomplish a few things. On the one hand, they show us the pains that we bring upon ourselves because we do not listen to God's word and we depart and we do what we want to do. And if you've done that, then you know there are serious consequences in your life from that. That's just how it is. That's just how it will go. Because we love to take matters into our own hands. We love to try to run life. We love to try to solve all of our problems in our own wisdom. When things are not going well, particularly in our families, and why is it that all these struggles happen in families? Why is the uncle always so weird, right? I say that because I have a weird uncle. It's there that we take our eyes off the promises and we begin to seek for the blessing of the Lord in our own ways. We try to, in life's challenges, construct the family and map it out the way we think it's going to go. And it never really goes that way. And so then we're faced with tests and trials and difficulties and how we're going to handle these things. Well, that's what is at play this morning in this particular text, that the family of Abraham, the great covenant family, has a trust problem. And the family of Abraham has a control problem. And the family of Abraham is really, it's shocking how much of a mess this family really is in trying to control the promises of God. In all of this, the other thing that we see, the other lesson we learn is the good character, the really good character in this story, and it is the Lord, how his ways shine and that he will do everything that he said he's going to do, even when we have attempted to ruin the plan. Now, that doesn't justify a lack of trust. That doesn't justify lawless behavior. Doesn't justify antinomianism, whatever we might say. We're going to see here that they all suffered from the choices that are put on display in Genesis chapter 27. But it does inspire us, as this text is meant to do. It does inspire us and calls us to trust God and to rest on his promise and to wait upon him to fulfill his promise, knowing that he will do that. What's remarkable about the scene in Genesis 27 is that we come to Father Abraham's family, and every single one of them is doing what is right in their own eyes. Every single one. The covenant family is full of jealousy and lying and deceit and coveting and malice and manipulation and stupidity. And what did God do through all of this? So that seems to be the important question that you have to think about. What did God do in the midst of all of this? I want to walk you through this passage today and sort of zero in for a minute on each character and see what the Lord is showing us and why we have stories like this revealed to us. They're very important, and they really strike at the heart of what God is calling us to live by faith in the promise and to trust him. Let's begin with Isaac this morning. We read in verse 1 of Genesis 27, when Isaac was old and his eyes were dim so that he could not see, he called Esau, his older son, and said to him, "My son," and he answered, "Here I am." And of course, he calls him to prepare delicious food for himself. Now, this is an important scene in the Old Testament in terms of the blessings of the patriarchs, something we don't quite appreciate as much as we should. It's not like the closest thing maybe is a wedding where the father gets up and gives a few funny encouragements and we all laugh about somewhere along the line their children and the poor person marrying them. It's not true. The patriarch's final blessing was to bequeath an inheritance, to give rights. In God's family, in God's covenant family here, they understood this. It was also an act of submission by the patriarch to the Lord, and through him, the Lord was making determinations, prophetic determinations about the future. It would have been a public event The inheritance would go to the oldest son and would typically be given over a great banquet or a great meal, a feast. Well, this time is described. Isaac here calls Esau to his bedside. He's old. His eyes, he cannot see. And he says to Esau, I'm old. I do not know the day of my death. It's coming. Take your weapons, your quiver and your bow. Go to the field and hunt game for me and prepare for me savory food, delicious food, such as I love, so that I may eat it and my soul may bless you, my son, before I die. Now, the first thing to notice here is that the whole thing's being done in secret. He knows such actions will cause complete upheaval in the family. He hides the whole thing from his wife, Rebekah, and has this secret plan here that he will accomplish giving the blessing to his favorite son, Esau. And it's not hard to miss why. The text gives a few different reasons. The first is kind of shocking, that really one of the great reasons he wanted to bless Esau was because he was a mighty hunter and provided him great game, fed him. We read that here, that Esau was a great and mighty and skilled hunter. He could really cook it up. Remember, Esau would have the same pattern in him. He would sell his own birthright for a bowl of soup. The birthright was also important. It was the important right. It was a spiritual right that secured the family inheritance and the position of authority in the family. And so it's really interesting to see the tie between Isaac and Esau, and then we'll see Rebekah and Jacob. We see something important. Isaac is given to sensuality, and the same sin shows up in Esau. I think it's important to say that in the transmission and imputation of sin, it's important to say that it's not just what we might say legal. The reformers would talk a lot more about this than we're used to. I was talking to Dr. Clark about this. The same real sins of the father are mysteriously communicated to the children. Same sins. It's just the reality. Isaac was knit to Esau, and they're very much alike. Sensuality here is emphasized. But there's more. When Jacob and Esau were in the womb, you'll remember, the whole sort of pattern of their existence together is captured in that in the womb, these two fought. If you don't believe in the sinful nature in the womb, you're wrong. They fought. And Rebekah asked the Lord about this. She went to the Lord and sought the Lord's wisdom and answer on this. And remember what he said. Two nations are in your womb, and two peoples from within you will be separated. One people will be stronger than the other, and the older will serve the younger. So the blessing had been established by the Lord that in Isaac your seed shall be called, in Jacob your seed shall be called. And determined by the Lord, sovereignly determined in his will and decree, sovereign choice, election. And that began to play out in life. Jacob would manipulate Esau, wouldn't he, when he was hungry? And fighting among them continued, and the brothers continued to fight, and then scheming, Esau, he sold his birthright for a pot of stew. What's clear here is that with Isaac, this whole trajectory deeply troubled him. And what's evident here in the life of Esau was And don't miss this about Esau. I think it's easy to sort of read this and feel sorry for Esau. Esau, the whole picture of Esau, all through the scriptures, all the way to the book of Hebrews, was that Esau lived a life as a covenant child, rejecting the Lord and in total unbelief. Now, this story's hard in some ways. It's difficult in many ways to see the failure. And I'm going to remind you where we're going with this, to see the goodness of the Lord in all of this. But Esau's life was one as a covenant child of rejecting the Lord all the way through. And I can prove that if you look at the end of chapter 26 and verse 34. This is highlighted. And by the way, you'll notice that Rebekah at the end of our chapter in 27 says, I'm of grief of mind about these Hittite women. Notice it in verse 34. When Esau was 40 years old, he took Judith, the daughter of Beeri, the Hittite, to be his wife, and Basemath, the daughter of Elon, the Hittite, and they made life bitter for Isaac and Rebekah. They were a grief of mind to them. It's no little statement. And you can't miss this, and it's an appeal, that one of the great signals of unbelief in a covenant child's life, you think of all the blessing of being raised in the covenant and having been set apart and been instructed and taught these things. One of the great signals of unbelief in a covenant child's life is to openly marry somebody outside of the covenant. To just do it. It's a great signal of where that heart is. In the Bible, Malachi, it's covenant treachery. It's being treacherous against the Lord because he has set you apart. Well, by chapter 27, all the patterns of unbelief are deeply rooted in Esau's life. He despises his inheritance. He sells off the birthright for a pot of stew. He marries pagans. It meant nothing to him. It meant nothing to him. And it all showed that he hated God. And that's just an appeal to our young people. Marry well. And I'm going to push even further on that point. Marry someone who's of like mind with you in your spiritual convictions. Because if you're not, you will be pulled away. You will not grow. This is really crucial to Esau's tragic course in life. Now, what makes this shocking is that Isaac is rebelling against the clear word of the Lord. This was revealed. The older will serve the younger. Against all evidence, against the declaration of the Lord, Isaac idolized his son over God.
That's all the time we have for you today. We thank you for joining us here on Abounding Grace Radio with Pastor Chris Gordon. We hope you'll join us again next time for part two of this message from Pastor Chris. Thanks again. Until next time, God bless.